All right, so as we dive back in, we have been, of course, looking at the biblical timeline of the last week of the earthly ministry of Jesus. In our last study, we were looking at the Passover and the events that came along that night. We were talking last week, we ended talking about the institution of the Lord's Supper and kind of what that represents. Now, again, as I mentioned, and I will probably mention several times, is I'm fascinated with the differences in the Gospels as much as I am their similarities. One of the things that John solely records is what we find in John chapter 13. At one point, and I didn't know quite, it's hard to know exactly where this goes in the timeline, but many think it was before the institution of the Lord's Supper. There are some others maybe think it's afterwards. But at one point in the evening, Jesus will wash the disciples' feet, and that's what we record in John 13. And so I want to go through that for just a minute and then look at some implications and some things that fell right afterwards. So let's go to John 13, and a little lengthy of a reading, but if somebody doesn't mind reading verses 1 through 11. So John 13, 1 through 11. Anybody care to?
Before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he should depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself about. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel with which he had girded himself. And so he came to Simon Peter, and he said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said to him, What I do you do not realize now, but you shall understand hereafter. Peter said to him, Never shall you wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I do not wash you, you have no part with me. Simon Peter said, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not all of you. For he knew that the one who was betraying him, for this reason he said, not all of you are clean.
So there are several fascinating things, I think, from these events. Number one is the introduction in verse 1. So we've already noted before the Lord's Supper, before the institution of that, Jesus had said to his disciples, I have longed to do what? To partake of this meal with you. Jesus is always present in the moment. He's never distracted. He understands the heavenly implications. And really this week, that's become really evident as you read about his actions. And how it seems like, to me at least, that every time he's with his disciples, he's just soaking that in. Because he really does understand this is it right here. Now we've got to, you know, it's the night before he's crucified. He'll never spend an evening like this with his disciples again. Not in physical form. At least not this way, right? I know he'll come back after his resurrection and he'll spend some time with them. But he's just sitting there. And what does verse 1 tell us as he's looking around? What's going through his mind?
He knew that it was becoming time when he would have to depart.
Okay, so his departure time was there, right? So He understands that. What else? You see anything else there? What does the text say? Having what? He looked around having loved them, right? He's looking around and he is, you know, we all have loved ones, people we care deeply about. And sometimes, you know, people pass on and it's real quick and it's, they're here and then gone, right? And how many of us have thought back, man, just to have those last few days with them again, to have those moments, you know, we don't know when people we love are not going to be with us, or often we don't know when we're not going to be with them. But if you did, would you change how you behave? Absolutely, all of us would. You would soak that in. You'd want every moment to last as long as it could. And as he's looking around there, and he's looking at each one of them, and he's simply playing out in his mind how much he loves each one of them. And so at one point during the supper, it says in verse 2, so you've got a couple of things to contrast. I love to go through and make contrast, right? When you got Jesus over here, and then who you have on the other side. Who's he being contrasted against in this text? Judas, right? Judas is the character he's being contrasted against. How do you see, how are they different as you go through this? What are some of the stark contrasts that come out about these two? Any kind of characterizations that maybe you'd lay out in your mind between these two individuals? Okay, so very different in their attitude toward other people, right? Jesus is someone who gives and gives and gives, and Judas is someone who's always looking to get. What can I have? That's I think that's plain. What else do you see? Who's Judas really in love with? Or what is he really in love with? Money. You know, what makes him happy in the moment? Does he really love people? I'm sure he has some love in his heart. I heard somebody say this, and I think it's true. There's no human being that's all good or all bad, right? We're all somewhere in that spectrum. And he's on the other side, definitely. But Jesus chose him. What drives him, though, is very different. What he's given himself over to is characterized how? In this text, how is he characterized? As a man who what? Greed. What does it say about Satan did what? Satan entered his heart. Now, my belief is that's symbolic. He's not talking about demon possession here. But what he's talking about, I believe, is that he just completely devoted himself to my personal gain, right? To his greed, to his desire for the lust of the flesh. He'd really just given himself over to it. And so you have those two contrasts. And to really make this the stark difference, Jesus gets up and he ties that towel around himself. He gets the bowl and the towel, and then he starts washing the disciples' feet. Now, I'm going to jump ahead just for a second. There's one phrase that in rereading this really jumped out to me, and it's near the end. Go to verse number... Okay, so Jesus goes to Peter. Peter didn't want his feet washed at first, and we'll talk about why in just a second. But then after Jesus says, if you don't let me wash your feet, you can't have no part in the kingdom. What's his response? If that's the case, you just wash me all over, right? You wash my head, my hands, too. But notice Jesus' response. And this has never really stood out to me until I reread it. And then I was like, huh, that's fascinating. So verse 10. The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. What's the next phrase? You are clean. I started thinking about that. I was like, huh, that's interesting. So he says to Peter, you are clean. What is he saying to Peter in making that statement? Number one, let's think. If I'm thinking outside the box, is he talking about something physical, or is he talking about something symbolic when he says clean? How is he using that term? I think it's symbolic. Why is that the case? I agree. Yeah, the statement before that, I think, is both physical and spiritual. But I think this is talking about spiritual or symbolic. Why? What's his very next thing? You're clean, but not all of you are clean. When he says that phrase, what does he mean? Does he mean that somebody in the room hadn't taken a bath in a while? Now, I've been with some boys at church camp before, and they weren't all clean. I've been there when you have to make, and this is the same every year. There's a day you have to make all of them go and take a shower. Because that's just boys for you. I don't know about girls. That's a different experience. Never been over there. I know what the boys are like. Is that what he's talking about? No, he's not talking about physical cleanliness, right? Who is he talking about when he says, not all of you are clean? Judas, right? He's not saying, Judas, you need to go take a bath. And Judas, you've got sin in your heart. And you're going to say something, Dwayne?
That's what I was
going to
say.
Oh, stole your thought. I'm sorry. So I think that's interesting. So he says to Peter, you are clean. So what is he saying to Peter? If this is symbolic of spiritual things, what is he saying about Peter in the moment? Yes, you're clean, right? You've been cleansed. But not all of you. Some of you have false motives. I think Peter makes mistakes, doesn't he? Now, he's not sinless in that view. But what separates Peter from Judas? His heart. His motivations, I don't think, are impure at any point. I think what motivates him is a love for Jesus. Now, he makes mistakes. Because his motivation may be right, but his actions are not what they should be. So you back up here, and Jesus gets down. Now, you also have a stark contrast when you've got the master teacher, the rabbi, coming along and washing the feet of the apostles. I think it's hard for us to really get into how crazy that would have been for the apostles. But in their time, for a rabbi to get down on his feet and to serve those he's teaching would have not happened. That would have been radical. Who did the serving when the relationship of the rabbi and the student? The student did. It's like, could you imagine going on a military base and having all the cadets there having their shoes polished by the sergeant, by the drill sergeant? Is that what happens? Would you have the drill sergeant going in and cleaning the latrine for the cadets? You don't have that. Why not? Why don't you have that?
You wouldn't have an army that functions like that.
And why not? I agree. So you're setting a line of command, right? You don't go to a basketball practice and have the coach run suicides while the rest of the team stands there and watches him do it. Right? That just doesn't happen, right? He's not the guy taking the dirty jerseys and going and washing them afterwards. That's the poor manager who's over here. But you've got something going on that you... It may seem at first, why does Peter say, don't wash my feet? I mean, shouldn't he just accept that? Well, no. What he thinks, I believe in his mind, is Jesus is disgracing himself. Now, what's the message Jesus is trying to teach? What? Humility. Any other thoughts? Service. But isn't there something big? I agree with all of those. Is there something bigger he's driving at? Okay. Humbly.
I think believe. You just didn't believe Christ was who he was.
Okay.
Or he wouldn't have done what he did. I mean, think about it. He's got to think of this next move. What do you do when you pull the, believer on that, on what he did? What would your next move be if he truly believed that he was Jesus? I mean, I think it has to be believed.
He's the servant of leadership.
Servant leadership. Okay. Dwayne.
I think he's demonstrating to them that if I will do this, you should not have any trouble doing the same type of thing to each other and to the followers that are going to come after. Because if he does it, then we don't have any excuse not to do like he does, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all that's right, and he's really turning over for them the whole hierarchy of religion. The religion of the day taught that the betters were treated better, they were elevated, and what he's saying is that's not how you prove you're better. You prove you're more faithful by how. By what you're willing to get on your knees and do. That's how you prove faithfulness. Faithfulness is not commanding others to do the work you should be doing. You hear that? Faithfulness is not commanding others to do your work. Saying that's not how it works. It says you want to you want to be faithful? Lead. Work. Do. That's what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. And so, Peter struggling with that. Now, I don't think he's the only one struggling. He's the one talking up. Now, the other fascinating thing that I pull out of this is the fact, who's sitting there? Well, you have all the disciples. And that includes whom? Judas. He's right there. One of those feet he washes. Yeah. Good call. Two of those feet is Judas's feet. I mentioned this before, but I cannot just, it's so hard for me to think what was going through Judas's mind at the time.
As far as this is, I thought about this a lot. I think Judas did believe. I think he made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we do today. I mean, he saw miracles. He heard all the preaching. He had the front row seat just like Peter did. I think he wanted a place of excellence. He wanted to be like the priest. He wanted to be he wanted the richest. He wanted the preeminence. He just chose. He knew. He believed. Mm-hmm. He chose not to follow. He chose not to buy into it.
Yeah. So Judas is an interesting character, person. I do too. I think he, but what do we know about all of them? They all are struggling with understanding who Jesus really is. Even at this moment, none of them understand what he has to do. I don't think they're going to be able to really wrap their minds around that until later, even afterwards, and they're looking backwards. And Jesus says this, we'll get to it in a minute, in John 16, he tells them, or is it 14? I think it's 14. Anyway, it's coming up here in his conversation in John. Yeah, John 14. John 14, he tells them, there's many other things you need to know, but I can't teach you because you're not ready for it. And so, yes, I believe Judas did. Now, how did they view Jesus? Just like those in John 6, they believed he was a king, an earthly king. They still believed in revolution. That's why Peter brought his sword and cut off Malchus's ear. Now, some have tried to assume that Judas, and I don't really buy into this, but I'll just some have theorized that Judas, in selling out Jesus, was actually just trying to get the revolution started. I don't see any proof of that. You may read some of that out there, but I do believe he believed, but like you say, he didn't have real faith, right? And he chose money over Jesus. So, and he's one of those with two feet who are being washed. And I can imagine however long that took, every second must have felt like an eternity for him. Because what do we know has already happened? He's already set things in motion. He's already agreed to the pieces of silver. He's already agreed to betray Jesus. All that's set in place. Now it's just waiting for it for the right moment. And that's coming up. But all that's lined up for Judas. So essentially, he's already committed the act. And he's having to have Jesus wash his feet. And so when you go to verse 11, Jesus says, not all of you are clean. What is he saying to Judas? I know what you did. I know who you are. You're not hiding anything from me. And you know that later on. Let's go back to the text. Let's go to verse 12. Somebody read, if you don't mind, 12 through 20.
But when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, you do not know what I have done to you. You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example. You should do as I have done to you. Most surely I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I do not speak concerning all of you. I know whom I have chosen, that the scripture may be fulfilled. He who eats bread from me, and lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it comes, that when it does come to pass, you may believe that I am he. Most assuredly I say to you, he who receives whomever I send receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me.
One of the things that's interesting to me as well is the fact that I believe all four Gospels record that a very similar phrase to what you find in verse 18, when he talks about the heel of bread. Now, if you drop down in the text, down to, verse 21, he says, one of you will betray me. Then verse 26, Jesus said, it is he who to whom I give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it. So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Iscariot. All of them record that, or something similar to that. I think that's interesting that they do that. They're really pointing out this fulfillment of prophecy that one of the friends of Jesus would be one to betray him. And so as Jesus is sitting there, he knows full well what Judas has done. And they're all listening. Now, what's the reaction of the disciples? Yeah, is it me? John says, is it I? It's interesting. John notes himself how the apostle who was leaning against Jesus, right? Jesus says, it's the one whom I give the morsel of bread. And they don't get that. I don't know exactly why, but maybe they're thinking too much about their own situation, but they don't seem to, any of them, catch that. But you do have this conversation between Jesus and Judas. If you go down to verse 27, John 13, 27, then after he had taken the morsel, Judas, Satan entered into him. And so I believe that symbolically what it's saying is he made his final decision. This is what I'm doing. And once he made that, again, it's as if he had already done it. And then what does Jesus say to him?
What you do, do it quickly.
Do it quickly. Go on. Get it over with. And that really sets up the evening going forward. He leaves from there. Now, John does not record the institution of the Lord's Supper, but many believe it takes place right after Judas leaves. And that's when he institutes that, and then they leave. But before they leave, in John 13, now this is a popular verse you will hear in different sermons and classes from time to time. But go down to verse 34, 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You're also to love one another. By this people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. So those verses get quoted a lot, but this is the context they come out of, is this particular evening, out of the time when Jesus is washing their feet. So it really gives, to me, it helps to really bring that verse to life when he says, you love one another as I've loved you. Right, they had a very concrete, immediate example to think about, which is him washing their feet. All right, that was something for them later on as they thought about that verse to be reminded of. Well, that was the night Jesus washed our feet. And he says, you love one another as I've loved you. And so you need to serve one another in that same way. And so, I didn't bring this up on the slide, but there it is. Jesus washes their feet, and then it's after this. In just a few minutes, they'll leave and go to the garden. One more thing before they do, though. Any questions about that? Yes, Dwayne?
I just think it's interesting the way Jesus treats the disciples, including Judas. Mm-hmm. Because he knows what's going to happen. He's God. But it's like when you know that somebody promised to do something for you, and you know they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of keep the door open. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll come. Maybe they'll do this. Maybe they'll do that. But you kind of, you know that they're not going to. Well, multiply that times 1,000, and that's what you've got with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows that Jesus is going to betray him, but he washes his feet just like everybody else. He keeps talking to him. But I think when he gets to the point where he says, whatever you're going to do, do quickly, that's when he's finally realized, says, okay.
And it's
what you're going to do, do it.
And that statement only comes after The text tells us that Satan entered his heart, right? That he made that decision. I'm going to do this. This is what I'm doing. And then then the text says Jesus said, "Go do what, go do it quickly."
But and this might already been said, but is this not just you still love the sinner?
Yeah, I mean, the text, you go back to the first part of chapter 13, he's looking around the room, what does it say? He looked around having loved them all. I don't think he did. I don't think he hated Judas. I think he loved Judas. But ultimately, Judas had to make his own choice. Good comments. And again, I'll say this too, I think if Judas had repented, I think God would have forgiven him. I really believe that. So, any other things? The interesting contrast, as I mentioned too, between Judas and Peter, and a lot of contrasts we can make. They both, in essence, have a lack of faith. Yes, ma'am. Well, how would any of us repent, right? If he, say that one more time.
I'm just thinking of what you said, that if Judas repented, that you would have forgiven him. I'm just saying, Paul, when you say...
How would he have repented? So I think this is why Peter's a great one to contrast it with. Both Judas and Peter had a lack of faith, didn't they? Both, in essence, denied him. Both sinned. The difference is Peter repented and Judas didn't. How did Peter repent?
He acknowledged his sin and turned away from it.
Exactly. He turned away from it. He came back. We'll see this in just a minute. Well, Jesus says to him, after you come back, strengthen my sheep, right? We'll go there in just a minute. But it's the coming back, right? What did the prodigal son have to do? He had to come back, right? He had to change his mind, change his heart, and return. Jesus tells us that there are only one thing that cannot be forgiven. What is it? What's the only sin cannot be forgiven? Blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, which I think is unrepentant heart. That's a whole different discussion. But he says you can be forgiven if you blaspheme the Father. You can be forgiven if you blaspheme the Son. You can. I really believe Judas, if he had returned, could have been forgiven, but he didn't. He chose the other door. What's that?
We are told that there is a time it will be too late.
And that's the end of his life, right? So, good comments. All right, so as I mentioned, you get an interesting contrast between Judas and Peter. And so let's talk about Peter for a minute. All right, let's go to Matthew 26. Now, this one is recorded in all four Gospels. This is one that's similar, but you get a little bit different information along the way. So I got 5 minutes. That's the first bell. I was watching him. Matthew and Mark are very similar. I'm going to let you read Mark on your own. But let's go to Matthew 26. Matthew 26. This appears... Well, we'll read it first and then we'll discuss it. So if somebody doesn't mind reading verses 30 through 35. So Matthew 26, 30 through 35. Somebody grab that if you don't mind.
And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then said Jesus unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you unto Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter said unto him, Thou, though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all the disciples.
Okay. So they sing a hymn. Again, I mentioned this before, but wouldn't you love to know what that song was? What was that hymn? It had to be powerful. But they sing the hymn. They go out toward the Mount of Olives. And this is in Bethany. The Mount of Olives has come up before. We've noted previously that Jesus has went out there the week leading up. It appears every night he was going out to the Mount of Olives to pray. So this is part of his normal routine of what he'd been doing. And so now they're going out again. So it's, that part of it probably felt very similar, right? This is what we do. We go out, we go pray. It also was pretty normal for Jesus when he would go out to pray to go off by himself. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But as they're going, this conversation comes up, and it's over. Jesus quotes to them a prophecy about the shepherd, and what's at the heart of that. Okay, so later on, let's just say, how many of the disciples scattered? All of them. It wasn't just Peter, by the way. He wasn't the only one who ran away. What is Peter's, in this moment, how would you assess is his pitfall here? What?
Fear.
I wouldn't say in this moment it's fear. Later on, I think that's true. But right in this moment, what is it?
Confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely still confused about that. But who said pride? I think you're right. I think, yeah, he's. Doesn't it remind you a little bit of the Pharisee and the publican when they go in to pray? He's like, hey, if they all run away, I'm not going to. I'm here. And he's very prideful about it. And so when Jesus says, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times, how do you think he's taking that? Like, how dare you say that to me? I'm here every moment. I've got my sword. I don't know if he did that, but he had his sword on his side. I'm ready. But Peter was ready for what? For what?
Battle.
Revolution. Huh? I think he was brave. He was brave in one way. He was brave to go out. I think he would have died. Oh, is it? You can't be. Okay. I'll end with this. I have a lot more I want to say. But I do think he was brave, and he would have went to war. He would have died for Jesus. What he wasn't willing to do was to live for Jesus. But he wasn't ready to be the humble sacrificial servant just yet. And I think you see that as you move forward. Yes, sir. Yes. And there's an interesting verse there. I'm out of time. But there's something Jesus says I want to catch next week about that. He says, so this is a moment when it's really good to look at all four Gospels because they give us a full picture. Interesting. All right. We'll pick up with Peter's denial next week.